Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski are here with you. We're cruising through our Bengals 50 series right now.
I know.
We're moving. We got a lot of good stuff that's out there if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Go to Cincinnati.com, go to the Bengals site, go to the Bengals tab there, and man, it's all up in there. Boy, the comedy club story last week was hilarious.
It was.
I mean, it's just epic. Boomer and Sam Weiss. There's maybe the two of the best storytellers in Bengals history, telling a great one. So go check out all that stuff. Curse of Bo, Dave Shula. There's tons of stuff there. Right. Lots of stuff there. This week on the podcast, and also a story at Cincinnati.com, is Corey Dillon.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the most controversial figures in Bengals history because of how good he was and the things he said while he was here during a very rough period of time for the Bengals. I got to tell you, this since I took over this job full-time and joined the Inquirer fully a few years back, this has been the one interview I've wanted to do, and he's been elusive. No one has really talked to Corey about this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's shown up occasionally with a quote. TMZ tracked him down at one point, and he'll show up talking about a thing here. But to talk about how it all went down, he's not done that. And he's living in L.A., and I was able to track him down with the help of some people, particularly a couple people in the Bengals organization helped out as well. And, boy, was it eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
worth it. Those things don't. You've had this before, where you have an interview that you want so bad, and then you have it, and you're just afraid it's not going to live up to the hype.
Right.
I feel like this one just it went beyond the hype that I placed on it in my own head.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Paul. Especially for the way he left, you know. But then even some of the things that he accomplished while he was here, and then to. As he said on several occasions, as you all will hear shortly, you know, he's a much older man now.
Yeah.
And that perspective on a lot of this stuff. And also just the honesty, too. Like, there's some, we won't give it all away, but you're right, Paul. It was, he was really good.
Really honest, really forthright, and thoughtful. I mean, about kind of reflecting on what his time in Cincinnati meant and his own maturation there. And, lots of stuff about the Hall of Fame, and there's lots of good stuff. I don't want to hold off too much longer, but make sure you keep checking in. Of course, we've got a lot of good stuff up on the site this week. So make sure you go on Cincinnati.com. There's plenty of stuff on players, promos. What else do we have going on in this week?
Yeah, this is – we finally get into the players.
Yeah.
So done twisting the knife a little bit with the Bill Walshes and the Joe Montanas of the world. But, yeah, it's offense this week. So, of course, Corey Dillon is on that list, although I guess we
twisted
a fork in your eye with Achilles Smith and David Klingler at the end of the week. David Klingler actually did not want to talk to us. This is one of the few out of the 50-plus.
Very few, yeah.
That said thanks but no thanks.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to move on. And I get it.
Yeah, but he's still got Bengals in his bio page, though. So if you're going to move on, then move on, in my opinion. But, you know, David, he was very nice and – declining his interview. But yeah, I mean, we hit a lot of offensive players. Frankly, Paul, I mean, this franchise has had far more influential guys on that side of the ball.
Yeah, a lot more. A lot more.
But yeah, no, and make sure to listen to Corey here, and Paul and I will be back after to kind of break some stuff down.
Break down, because there's a lot to sift through. So we'll be back afterwards. And in the meantime, my white whale interview. Talking with Corey Dillon about his great career in Cincinnati, winning the Super Bowl, and a lot of the tumultuous ways in which he ended up exiting and really serving a lot of his time here. So live from L.A., Corey Dillon.
What are you up to now these days? What are you doing?
Highlights of my day is, hey, trying to post a low golf score. That's about it. I'm a golf fanatic, so I spend most of my free time playing golf, to be honest with you.
Yeah. What's the handicap down to?
Actually, I got it down to about, it's about a 10 now.
Nice.
Oh, it's not bad. Not bad at all, man. I've been working on it very, very hard, and every time it's a process, learning stuff new and just trying to hit the ball straighter. But it came down. I went from 90s. Well, let me give you the play. Went from 100 to 90. Now I'm consistent low 80s every round. So that's better. Now I'm trying to crack the 70s. That's my goal. Into the 70s somewhere.
That's a good feeling right there. So next stop is the Pro-Am in Tahoe, right? I mean, that's the next stop.
Look, I will tell you what. If I get around a crowd of people and try to get a ball, somebody's getting hurt. It's not going to work out.
That's what I'm saying. I never like when there's a crowd around. I'm not good with it. I'm bad enough with houses. Like, I don't need a crowd watching. Like, I don't want to endanger lives.
Hey, I will be a nervous wreck. Somebody's going to the hospital. I don't need that.
Oh, man. So, I mean, is it hard for you to believe that it's been 10 years since you walked away from the game?
Not really. I mean, it's I think I left the game at the right time. I think there's a lot of stuff I didn't really know about the game, like the CTE stuff and these concussion protocols and all this other stuff. And, you know, I just walked away completely. I was just exhausted. I was burnt out on football. So, you know, looking back on it, I think I did the smart thing. I mean,
yeah.
I really didn't have no major injury. I think the worst of playing football was, I think it was, I'm going to say 03, was when I had a torn groin. Now, that was the worst of it. So I think I was fortunate and blessed to get out the game with no major.
Yeah.
Real big injury, so.
You never really had any bouts with concussions at all, huh?
Not that I know of, and if I did, who knows? I don't think back then there was no protocol for that, so I don't know.
Yeah, but hopefully, I mean, for the most part, I mean, you got to say, when you look back at a running back that played your style of play, to play for that many years and really only have one relatively serious injury and rarely miss games, you got to look back and think, man, you were really living a charmed life to come through as healthy as you did.
And that's when I look back, that's what I say to myself. I was like, man, I've been blessed. I'm fortunate. I don't really have nothing, you know, an injury that could, you know, threaten me down further in my life. I mean, so I was like, yeah, very blessed and fortunate and had a pretty decent career.
Yeah, I would say so. Can we walk down memory lane a little bit? I have a couple of games I want to pick your brain on.
Okay.
I got to start with the rookie year. Backstory, I actually, I was about 16, 17 years old. I actually lived in Cincinnati. And it was one of my first memories of going to a football game was Thursday Night Football.
Against the
Oilers. And you went off for 39 and 246 and set the rookie record. I never forget it. What was that night like for you, in the fact that it really kind of put you on the map. Is that how you kind of viewed it? I mean, you really kind of made a name for yourself right away that night.
No, I don't. I just, you know, to be honest with you, I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to do, you know, and that's, hey, run the football, be effective, do whatever it takes to help the team win. I really wasn't into stats, never. I just like to go out there, play my hardest, and at the end of the game, we'll see where I'm at. And that was just one of those nights where, you know what, everything was hitting. Offensive line was creating a lot of space for me. All I had to do was touch the ball and get upfield with the ball. And you know what? And it turned out to be one of those historic nights. And it was a good night. It was just it was an awesome good night. And as a rookie to rush for 200 plus yards, wow. I got home and I sat back and recapped the game and was like, damn, we did something good. Not bad.
I mean, does that one rank up there for you, or not? Just because it was so early, I don't know if it's hard when you're a rookie to really gain appreciation for what it was because you're so young at that point.
Man, it didn't really. You know what? It didn't register then. When I stopped playing, and then I started looking back on some of the stuff I did. It clicked. It registered with me. But at that moment, I think I was just in the moment. You know what I mean? And I'm always thinking, I could do better. I could, you know, there's something else better for me to do. So it didn't register then. But now, I can look back on it and was like, wow, that wasn't bad at all.
Yeah.
Not for a rookie.
No, not for anybody. But for anybody.
You know what I mean?
I was going to say, 39 for 246. So you can't find me a soul in the league that wouldn't take that for sure. It's along the same lines. I mean, you know, I think what will go down is one of the greatest games a running back's ever had, which was, you know, October 10th, 2000. You know it. I mean, you probably know these stats. 22 for 278. Yeah, a couple of touchdowns. You average 12.6 per rush. But here's a stat. You think you're not stacking, but I want to know if you remember this. Do you remember the stats of your quarterbacks that day?
Man, he probably had a total of 6 yards passes. Something like that.
2 for 14 for 9 yards.
Oh, well, I was close.
You
were close. I was close.
I mean, is that just not the most ridiculous game that you've ever been a part of for the fact that everybody in the building knew when you were back there that you were getting a ball and you guys couldn't pass for anything and still you end up setting a record? I mean, can you even look back on it now in disbelief?
You know what? It's ridiculous due to the fact that at the time Denver was like the number two defense in the league, I think.
Yeah.
I think they was overall number two. And everybody, they're loading that box up. They know we're running. And we come out with a record. Man, that's crazy. Nobody could script that. Nobody could write it better than that. That was an insane day. And that was like the Thursday night game. We were just in a zone. It was just, I mean, the holes were there. I don't know what was going on. It seemed like I was moving fast. Everybody was moving a little bit slower than I was, and I just seen everything. And I was just, hey, if it wasn't there, I would cut it back, and the hole was wide open. So it was like we could do no wrong.
Yeah.
No wrong forever.
Is there a play or a moment from that game that sticks out to you, just one that just – it was the kind of the one that always you remember?
That last run, because I think I was going to the right, and I didn't feel it. I didn't feel there was a hole there, and I reversed back to the left, and I had a couple people to beat. I think I did a jab move on one guy at the end, and got past him, and somebody clipped my just at the end. Clipped my foot, and I fell into the end zone. And I was the last run of that day. And as I scored, and the game was, I think that kind of sealed the game for us. I didn't know nothing about no record. I wasn't even thinking about no record. And I was coming out to the sideline, and they posted how many yards I had. I said, holy shit, are you serious? I said, wow. I said, okay.
Yeah.
I said, okay. And the thing about it was, I think Walter Payton just passed away in that year. So I kind of looked, and it was a great moment, but it was kind of bittersweet because, you know, that's Walter. I analyzed, this is my guy. You know, I grew up wanting to be like this guy. And for something like that to transpire, I actually, you know, got a record from him. It was bittersweet for me, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Still a great day. Great day.
I mean, that's got to be, I mean, you said, you were talking earlier about how, yeah, when you look back on your career, you can look back on it and see and understand and register. I mean, that has to be one that it probably, I would think it didn't take too long to register. Like, that's legendary stuff. That's stuff that people will be talking about forever, that it's in the books. You know, only some ways, I think, four people have beat it now, but I mean, that's going to be in the books for a long, long time.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I take my record, the way I broke it, over there any day. That's 22 carries. They took more carries, played worse defense than I did, and I take my day, I stack my day up with theirs any day. They can have a record, that's fine. But the way I did it, I take that over all of them.
Yeah. 12.6 per carry, I mean, you know, that's
that's crazy, right?
Stuff. Yeah.
That is insane. You can't even do that on a video game. That is crazy.
Yeah. Do you have, like, there's some famous pictures from that day. I know I see them around the building and stuff like that. Is there, do you have a photo from that day or any memorabilia from that day at your house?
You know what? They gave me a plaque. It was an inquiry, too. They came down and gave me a plaque, and it hangs in my house today, and it says, "What a Rush." And it recaps the whole, it recaps some of the game, and it got my photo on it and everything. And I don't, hey, it hangs up. I clean that thing off every other day. You know what I mean? So that's one of my favorite items that I have. And I tell you, man, hey, and you know what? It never gets old to me. Every time I go into my little man cave and I look at it, it brings back that memory. And brings back those memories. We did something good. It wasn't only me. The team. Offensive line. I mean, hey, defense played well. I think Peter Ward had about 100 yards himself.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was amazing.
It was a great offense.
Yeah.
Itself that day. I think we rushed for like 400 some yards. That's
mm-hmm.
not bad.
Oh, not bad. Are your cleats and like ball and stuff in the Hall of Fame then?
I know they got them. I don't know if they're still there now. Who knows? But yeah. I know after the game, like, they came and got some items from me, like my jersey and my shoes, and that was about it. I don't know if they're still there. Who knows?
Yeah.
I doubt, but I know they came and got them.
Have you been to have you ever been to Canton? Have you ever gone through the Hall?
I have never been to Canton.
Yeah.
And I might want to make a trip one day. You know what I mean? just to check it out.
I think many would argue that the NFL should mandate that you make a trip one day. You know?
I would argue, too. I mean, listen, the way I think, hey, I may be way off base with this. I mean, and this is just me. And no knock on nobody else. And I'm just bringing up this guy. Football-wise, nothing else. Nothing whatsoever. But you have O.J. Simpson in the Hall of Fame. My numbers is better than his. Why can't I be there is my question.
Mm-hmm.
What validates him being there and I don't? I don't get the call.
Right.
I ain't talking about his transgressions. All that's on him. I'm not condoning nothing like that. I'm just talking about strictly football. My numbers is better than his.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer.
I was running through, you know, there's a comparison I was just trying to find guys that were similar to you as far as era and time, and a few that have gone in have been Jerome Bettis and Curtis Martin. And, you know, they racked up a lot of numbers as far as, like, total rushing yards, but they played longer than you. But if you look at
three or four years more than me. Absolutely.
I just was rolling down through some of these stats. Let me roll through a couple of them with you. So yards per attempt, you topped both. You averaged 4.3 yards per attempt. Martin was 4, and Bettis was 3.9. Yards per game, yeah. You topped Bettis. You had 74.9, and Bettis was 71.2. Curtis Martin was up around 84. You were just shy of them in TDs by about. They were in 90. You had 82. You were in the top 10 in rushing yards 6 times. Bettis only 5. You went to 4 Pro Bowls. You were in top 10 in yards per attempt 5 times. Bettis only 4. Curtis Martin only 1. You won a Super Bowl. Curtis Martin never won a Super Bowl. I mean, it's not like your numbers are at the very least the same, if not better, when you look at it. When you see stuff like that and you see those guys go in and you played right alongside of them, is there a frustration in that for you? I mean, obviously you have a strong opinion that maybe you should be in there, but those guys from your era in particular, does that kind of rub you the wrong way?
I mean, it don't rub me the wrong way. I don't think they're evaluating the situation the way they need to evaluate it. I can't help it. I mean, I am what I am. I play. My numbers are what they are. I don't know if I got to go on TV to politic this thing. I mean, it seems like that's where this thing is going. You actually got to go and get a job on one of these networks and, you know, and do that. I don't think that's the right way of going about it. I mean, there should be somebody who could sit there and look at these numbers and be like, you know what, this guy is legit. You know what I mean? I don't think I have to go and politic and do all this stuff for some. I think I earned. I mean, who does that? But that's where it's at right now. I see a lot of these guys on TV, and they're getting a nod before anybody else. Now, you know what? Bettis, Curtis Martin, man, I played in that era with them guys. Them guys were good. Hey, they deserve to be there. They earned it. But then I think it was just this year. I turn around and I see Terrell Davis get in. You know what I mean? And I'm like, nope. 2 Super Bowls, MVP. This guy only got, at the most, 9,000 yards. Okay? And I'm thinking, I'm looking, I'm like, dude, I got a Super Bowl too. I got a lot. What's the problem here?
Right. I mean, a guy who Davis played 5 years, and he really only was legit. You know, he had 2 or 3 super years, including MVP. But longevity's got to count for something. I mean, that's got to be
too. And you got to look. I look at this too. You play for the Broncos, okay? Any running back that got in that system, they were good. Tell me one running back that didn't play there, that didn't have stats.
Yeah. I think Olandis Gary ran for 1,000 yards 1 year.
Man, shoot. Hey, my baby girl could have got played back here and got 1,000 without a problem. So I'm just saying, I don't know how – I'm not trying to ruffle no feathers with nobody who does the voting and how the process. I'm just saying it got to be something – it got to be reevaluated because I'm not really stressing that I'm not in there. Do I deserve to be in there? Do I think I deserve to be in there? I do. But I'm not going to sit here and talk bad or, you know, potty mouth the process because you know what? I see what's going on with Terrell Owens and I think that's crazy. You know what I mean? And I'm not a talker. I'm not going to get somewhere publicly and be like, oh, this is BS. No, I'm not going to do that. But I do think players shouldn't have to politic and jump through these hoops for something that's obvious. And trust me, the thing with Terrell Owens, that's obvious. There's no way he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I don't care. If we're going strictly on numbers, let's go on numbers. Let's just do numbers. I'm not talking about off the field. This dude ain't killed nobody. He ain't doing none of that. He ain't been arrested and if you ask me, there's people who have been who's a Hall of Famer. So that's no excuse. None whatsoever. Look at his numbers. This dude is probably the third. He's in the top four receivers all time. What's the problem?
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that. So
no, you're right.
I look at that situation. I look at all this other stuff going on. And I'm like, you know what? One day, if it's meant to be, hey, I will get that now. And that's how I go about it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get somewhere on live TV or start, you know, publicly saying, oh, the process is flawed. I'm not going to do that. That ain't my character anyway. So if it happens, it happens.
Well, I'll say it for you. The process is currently flawed, and hopefully they can find a way to fix it and start, you know, seeing things from guys that, you're right, that aren't politicking or out there. I talked to Willie Anderson about this a little bit. I talked to him a couple years ago on I was doing a podcast about the 90s Bengals, and he was saying, you know, you look at guys like you and like him and some other guys on that team really were overlooked for how good they really were just because the team was so wretched that it was like they
– Exactly.
Willie said, I didn't make Pro Bowls until 2003 on, basically, until it got later in my career. He's like, you think I all of a sudden got good in my 30s? Just because we were on winning teams,
exactly.
All of a sudden people recognize it. How much do you think the fact that the teams were just so bad really was part of what, you know, pulled guys like you and like Willie back?
I think that it had a lot to do with it. If you're not getting on nationwide exposure, nobody knows who you are. We went on TV all the time. Every blue moon. There's a televised game where, or people in the West Coast, they don't get the Cincinnati Bengals games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really know. They don't really know. Hey, well, who's this Corey Dillon dude? Who's Willie? You know, because they never see us. And on top of that, our record wasn't the greatest. So I really think nobody was really looking to see if we had talent. To be honest with you,
yeah,
but we did, despite the record, despite the the TV exposure, there were guys on that team that could play.
Yeah,
absolutely, and I think that set a lot of us back. It wasn't just only me; it was everybody, the organization, players. I mean, that kind of went hand in hand. So it wasn't to the I would say like 2004, 2005, things start shifting the other way. More exposure, they don't see more. People start recognizing some of the players, Chad Johnson, TJ Houshmandzadeh, Willie, people like that. Okay? And he's right. He didn't get good when he was 30. He'd been good. Why stick him to when he got in his 30s to start making Pro Bowls? He's absolutely right about that.
Yeah. You know, and there was, I mean, obviously, though, on those teams, there was a lot of people that were frustrated with what was happening. Obviously, you were one. You weren't afraid to voice your frustration, whether it was management. You're talking about the saying you'd rather flip burgers thing and then asking out in 2003, all that stuff. Do you have any regrets about that, or do you feel like that those were just things that you felt had to be said at that time?
Well, now that I'm a mature man at 42, I think I could have handled a lot of stuff differently. But when you're young and you're in that moment and you say and do a lot of stuff, hey, that you wish you could take back. And sure, yeah, there's a lot of stuff I wish I could take back. Absolutely. I mean, I want people to understand, man, I come from a place where losing is not an option for me. I don't think I lost in any from Pop Warner on through college. I have never in my lifetime lost more than 3 games in a season. Ever. So I get to going 3-13, 4-12. I'm like, oh, I don't know about this, man. What's going on? What can I started looking at myself. Am I doing something wrong? What can I do to get better? So I work my ass off and still getting the same results. So that what frustrated me. And, yeah, I said a lot of stuff that was out of character. Yeah, but then I look back on it. It got me somewhere where I needed to go. The ultimate. I got to experience my ultimate and live out my ultimate dream and goal, and I did that. But looking back on it, was there some wrongdoing on my part? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you look at it saying you want the end result to be the same, but you wish there was a better way of getting to it at this, you know, looking back.
Exactly.
On it. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly, man. There was a lot of stuff that, you know what, I said, you got to understand, there was a lot of stuff done too. So, hey, I'm a grown man. I can admit when I'm wrong. I did some stuff that was not cool, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not cool at all. But, hey, at the end of the day, I got the end result that I wanted. And yeah. That was experience playing on a stage, actually winning the Super Bowl. Yeah, do I wish it could have been with them? Absolutely. Absolutely. But it just it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. How did,
and
you know.
I mean, I don't have no ill will towards nobody there. It's just, hey, I was just voicing what I thought at the time I felt. And sometimes it came out wrong. Sometimes I was a little overboard with it, but I was just tired of losing. That's all I was trying to say. Hey, man, I want to win. I play to win. And this is wearing on me. And I wish somebody stepped up with me, be like, man, dude. And then they're not even step up. Trust me, man, there's a lot of guys in there who felt the same way I did. I'm just the one that to talk about it. I don't think I was the only one. There was a lot of people who felt the same way I did. I'm the only guy that just spoke on
it. Yeah. Did guys come up to you after that and say thanks for speaking up and thanks for saying that? What was the response you got when that stuff happened from players?
No. No. Because you know why? Because it's hey. They're like, well, it was new for everybody. They were gonna be like, they were looking to see what's gonna happen to Dylan. You know what I mean? This is what Dylan thinks, and we're gonna see what management does with him. Okay. So nobody really said team wise. Nobody really said nothing until I left. That's when everything started. Then, you know, while I was there. Nothing said. Everything was cool. Nobody, me and the players, I have no problem with nobody. They got it. But it's when I left. That's when everything, well, you hear this person saying this, that person saying that. I said, okay, that's fine. I never heard him when I was there.
Yeah. I know that the Bengals are bringing back top 50 players from the history now. I think they've reached out to you. What's your reaction to them reaching out to you? Is that something you're open to coming back for a game, or where's
yeah,
that at?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, listen, like I said, my mindset is totally different at 42 than 22 or 24 or whatever, man. Honestly, I let it go. It happens. I mean, stuff happens. It's a business. People come and go. And you know what? Hopefully, they say time heals wounds. I have no ill will towards nobody down there. My career is what it is. I did do some exciting things for that organization, and I appreciate them for drafting me. I can never, deny I wasn't a Bengal. I played 7 years hard for the Bengals. I'm a part of their history. they're part of mine, and I don't dwell on the past. What happened in the past is done. Like I said, if I had a magic wand to go undo some stuff, I would, but I can't. But that doesn't mean we can't move forward and have a better relationship. You know, so, and that's how I look at it. I appreciate them for giving me a call and inviting me back. That means a lot. Absolutely.
Yeah. So is it kind of now, like you say, you're an older, when you get to be 42 now, is that something that's important to you to go back and sort of officially heal those wounds and kind of have that moment to go, if you come back, is that something that'd be important to you to do now and kind of sort of, you know, bury the hatchet with everything?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm one of their top 50 players, right? Why not? Why not come back and, you know, make amends and clear the air?
Yeah.
And let it go.
Absolutely.
Whether you like me or not, the fact is I'm one of their top 50 players. Now, I would love to come back and have everything smooth, nice, and peachy. Absolutely, that's a dream. Come back and everybody, we got an understanding, and we got to let bygones be bygones. I've been to let. I'm over it.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. You know, it's been too long. I mean, I haven't played in 10 years.
Yeah.
Worried about something that happened in 2003. It's not on my list to deal with. Trust me.
Exactly. I had to ask you this, because I'm always curious by this. How did TMZ find you on the golf course?
Man, I have no clue. I don't know how they got my number. But, hey, the guy was just persistent on keep calling me. So I was just like, man, I need to get this guy off my tail. I'm trying to shoot a low 80. So I did the interview, and the subject of the matter was, of course, Marvin. And I was just basically sharing what I think. And you know what? Whether that ruffles some feathers or not, that's just my own opinion. Like I said, I don't have no ill will towards Marvin. You know what I mean? I'm not hating on him. I want the team to do well, and they do have talent. That's all I was alluding to. And if somebody took that the wrong way, hey, apologies to you. Okay,
yeah.
I'm not looking for nobody to get fired or lose their job. I just want them to go on and win a playoff game and reach that ultimate goal, just like everybody else wants them to do. You know, everybody wants to see in Cincinnati. Want to see them win a playoff game and keep pressing to go to the Super Bowl. Me too.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, do you follow them more closely or at all or differently than any other team?
Man, you know what? To be honest with you, it sounds weird. I don't really watch a lot of football until it gets like crunch time, like playoffs. And you know, I'm always looking. I'm looking at the Patriots. Definitely looking at Seattle since that's my home team. I'm always curious what's going on there, and I do catch. Hey, I catch the Bengals too. I'm always looking. I'm like, yeah. I want to be watching when they first playoff game. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. You the Super Bowl with Belichick. I mean, what was that run like? And you can go ahead and spill us. You're retired. What is Brady and Belichick's secret, man?
Man, I don't know what they got conjured up up there, buddy. I tell you what kind of program he runs, man, and it fits his way of running the Patriots kind of fit into my personality too. Because I don't like to talk about nothing. I don't want to talk about nothing. I just want to go out there and play and do my job and go home. And that's his philosophy, man. Just check your ego at the door. If you can't do that, he's going to get you out of there. Back to the ball. He wants tough, smart football players that are versatile. I mean, and that's it. And as players, we got in that locker room, we got to understand it, man. We all do what we do for one cause, and that's to win football games. Anything else, hey, man, we don't want to hear about it. And that's how they run it up there. As long as you're doing your job, hey, there's nothing to be said.
Yeah.
You see it time and time again. They just plug in other players, and that system just keep on moving.
Yeah.
Keep on going.
Do you bring the ring out ever, where you have the ring somewhere?
Man, you know what? It's in my safe, and you know what? I only wore that thing. I could count probably 3 times ever.
Yeah,
I don't even wear it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I look at it every blue moon, but as far as me going out gloating with it, that is not me at all.
No. Well, and you can't wear that or ruin your swing.
Absolutely.
Too big. Get in the way. You can't get a golf club outfit over that.
That handicap will go to 26 real quick.
Yeah.
Trust me.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Well, Corey, man, it's been really, really nice catching up with you. I really appreciate, chatting with you. It's really cool. I'm glad everything's going well. I'm glad that golf is your biggest stress right now, man.
Trying to get that ball straight. Trust me.
That's great. Well. So, have they asked you about like what game you would come back for if you would or anything like that? Have they gotten specific?
The way they set it up is they sent me an email, and I'm gonna go through the email and see what game is favorable for me and set it up that way. And I haven't looked, but I'm gonna be doing so in the next day or so to see what's a good time I can get out there. And most definitely, man, I'm looking forward to coming back and, hey, making amends for a lot of stuff. And like I said, man, I don't have no ill will towards nobody there, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, Marvin's still the coach. I mean, he's the coach, man. I don't have nothing, no personal gripe against him.
Yeah.
Not at all. I want him to exceed and do well and take the team far. So hopefully, hey, I could come back and everything be good, and we could move on and try to work on having a good relationship moving forward.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the interview with Corey Dillon as much as I did talking to him.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, living the life.
Right.
I'm going to play golf every day. Every day I'm going to play golf. That's my job, basically.
It means he banked those checks when he got them. That's
and good for
means.
Him.
Yes.
And good for him.
Yes.
You know, he's living the life right now. And, man, you played football that long, especially the way he played it.
Right.
You talk about your pre-CTE, and you sort of briefly got into the concussion thing there. You know, he earned the right to go play golf every day. Let's pick out a few. Let's just take three major takeaways from this, and we'll start with. And I sort of want to – let's just start with the Hall of Fame stuff. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. It honestly was a take that I hadn't thought of, but as he talked through it, it started to make more sense to me. And I wonder how much legitimacy there is to it. And it's not just a bit of sour grapes. But these guys that have gotten into TV, getting into the Hall of Fame, staying relevant, staying in the eyes of the media, those
who
people
vote.
Who are in the room, seeing them, hearing the case all the time,
right?
As opposed to a Corey Dillon who has just disappeared,
right,
and let his numbers sit out there. Terrell Davis, LaDainian Tomlinson, even Curtis Martin was in the media for a while. I mean, you get into these guys, and
I don't know. I think there's something to that because it is a trend, and I'm sure the networks will tell you, or they proved to be great talkers in their time, which Corey was a great talker. I think what's perhaps more legitimate was the other reason for that, and that was the teams weren't very good that he played on. That was back in the blackout days. There were fans in Cincinnati that maybe never saw him play certain home games, let alone on a national scale. And, fans don't vote for the Hall of Fame, but fans, I mean, that's what the conduit runs both ways, Paul. Like, player, we're the conduit from players to fans, but now this day and age with social media and everything, and yes, players do have their own accounts, but we can be a conduit from fans to players, or fans to other media,
yep,
or whatever. So I think the sort of lack of success for him and some others, his teammates, or even if we want to, you know, in this 50 series, other Bengals.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you're talking about a franchise with one Hall of Famer in 50 seasons, which just seems, the math seems odd there.
And
so,
let's say it's 40 seasons. Take the 90s out.
Yeah.
You know, right. let's just say it's, that's still odd to have only one on what's, when there's been a lot of good teams through that time. I mean, you start talking about Ken Riley and Willie Anderson and Kenny Anderson.
Yeah, who, those would be the big,
the most prominent with Corey, cases, the big, yeah, with Corey, the biggest ones that are out there. And Willie Anderson in particular, who you go back a couple years ago, and you can the link is up on his page here on Cincinnati.com this week, to the podcast I did with him a couple years ago. He really got into that about how, what do you think, I just got good when I turned 31?
Right.
Because that's when the Bengals started winning again, when Marvin Lewis was there at the end of his career.
Right.
No, he was good the whole time. Just no one cared when it was 2000s. I mean, the fact that Corey had games like he had was because there was potentially a Hall of Fame running back and a Hall of Fame right tackle.
Right.
And that was on those lines where they could run it and go 2 for 14 for 9 yards passing.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot to that. And I do think the Bengals franchise is flyover Hall of Fame country.
Yeah.
Forgotten. And until, you know, you go and you win a Super Bowl, that's going to be the case. But there's guys from the Super Bowl years that never got, that never did get the run. I mean, like MVP went to the Super Bowl. I mean, if Dan Bunz isn't in the conversation, is Ken Anderson in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah. I mean, his teammates for sure say, and they sort of almost regret that, like talking to Isaac Curtis about this and Dave Lapham. I mean, of course, they wanted to win the Super Bowl for themselves, for the Bengals, for the city of Cincinnati. But then as they talk about it, they're like, if we would have won, Ken would be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird even for them to say it, because they're like, but he played all those years and had the numbers and, you know, a league MVP and all that stuff. So does a single ring really mean that big of a difference? And
I think so.
You know,
to a quarterback.
Does. To a quarterback.
To a quarterback,
it does.
Yeah.
Because that would have...
Didn't
he
make a difference to Corey.
Right. Because he would have been Super Bowl MVP. You know, Ken Anderson would have been the Super Bowl MVP if they won. But, you know, and then Flip, you mentioned Willie Anderson. On the defensive side of the ball, next week, you know, a little spoiler alert, if you were Ken Riley, same deal, played 15 years, had 9 interceptions a couple times. His lone All-Pro was his last year in the league.
Yeah.
He didn't just suddenly get good at the age of 36.
No. No, but and longevity counts.
Right.
Longevity counts for something in this league, especially when you do it that consistently.
Right.
And people will throw Ken Riley in, well, Pro Bowls. Where's the Pro Bowls? Where's those? Yeah, I mean, he had a few seasons where he was at the top of the league, but he was consistent every single year. And the bottom line is 65 interceptions.
Yeah, he was 4.
That's hard to fight that number.
When he retired with that number, he was 4th in NFL history. And 20 years later, he's 5th in NFL history. Because Charles Woodson happened. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there's...
Yeah, it means something.
Yeah, Ken Anderson is tough because in this day and age, Paul, with the proliferation of the passing game, like, Ken Anderson's numbers, and even for as accurate as people say, like, his completion percentages are still not...
You've got to look
comparatively.
You've got to look at errors.
Right. But at least Ken Riley, though, picks are picks.
Mm-hmm.
And tackles are tackles and fumbles, you know what I mean? And that
Ken Anderson is as close of these four that we were kind of talking about. Ken Anderson is as close as any of them to actually getting in.
Right.
And I think within the next, you can make an argument if the snake had not passed when he did,
right,
Ken Anderson would have been, because it was time for a quarterback to get in with the Veterans Committee. And I think Ken Anderson, there certainly would have been a debate there, but when Kenny Stabler passes away, and then the conversation and the vote happens.
Yeah.
The sentimentality to that, and he got in, and then now you got to wait. Now you got to wait rotations basically for another quarterback, because those guys you don't put 6 veterans in every single year. You know, you've got to kind of go through a rotation. I would like to think that there's going to be a Hall of Fame for Kenny Anderson in the future. I I know a lot of Bengals fans certainly hope and will be making the trek up to Canton if that happened. He was a beloved player from the early days of the Bengals. And you know, and then to get back to where we started here with Corey.
Right.
I mean, you put his numbers up. I read them off during the podcast.
Right.
Jerome Bettis, Curtis Martin, same era, same type of running back.
Right.
Almost same longevity of careers. His numbers are as good, if not better, depending on how you look at it. Pick your stat. He's either right there or better.
Right. And here's a funny thing about that, Paul. He went from toiling in anonymity in Cincinnati to becoming an important part of a Super Bowl winning team, but totally overshadowed by the head coach and the quarterback.
Right.
No one's going to look at
who
those.
Who leaned on him during the playoffs,
but no
that
one,
whole season of playoffs.
Nobody's going to remember that.
No, because remember Brady and Belichick.
Exactly. Right. So Corey Dillon was just another one of the interchangeable skill parts to Tom Brady. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that Corey fell into sort of odd, pots of anonymity. You know what I mean? Like breaking single game rushing records with a team that wasn't on television to winning a Super Bowl with,
a team where no one matters but Brady and Belichick.
Right.
Right. Consistently
so it,
for
it,
years.
It's just it's fascinating in a way, but, for obviously, as you guys heard it in Corey's voice, clearly frustrating.
Yeah. And I credit him. He doesn't want to go out ripping the Hall of Fame process, but he's also say it probably should get fixed.
Right.
I mean, you probably should. And I would agree. I mean, when you can't have that conversation, and let's be honest, Terrell Davis, Kurt Warner, Jerome Bettis, LT, you see a common thread? They are all guys that have been on TV and stayed a part of the conversation. And you could argue Kurt Warner and Terrell Davis's cases are fringe at best and have been entirely aided by them getting pushed and having a platform to push them on.
Yeah, I definitely lumped Terrell Davis into that because he wasn't Gale Sayers.
No.
Warner, I think, was what I think has a little bit different, but Terrell Davis for sure. Keep trying to keep apples to apples. But is Frank Gore, Steven Jackson, these are kind of the guys just after Dillon in this list. And it's just, you're right, though. I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting conversation, and the bottom line is you don't even really hear Corey's name mentioned.
No.
I mean, you don't. You just all of a sudden we're putting in Terrell Davis.
Right. Will the fantasy football or video, the EA video game show, help Fred Taylor's case?
I don't know. Fred Taylor's got a case. Absolutely has a case. Maybe it will. I don't know.
Would you bet on the Jags then?
Moving on. In our conversation,
you want to put a bet on Fred Taylor's case in the Hall of Fame?
I do not. I do not.
Okay.
Let's talk about another thing that you brought up. You brought this up before we recorded this, and it hadn't occurred to me when listening to it. But once you brought it up, it is a really interesting observation, and that's the plaque that the Bengals gave him for his 275 game that he dusts off every other day.
Right.
Every other day, he goes up, dusts it off, thinks about it, makes sure it looks good. Every other day. Where's that Super Bowl ring? I don't know. I think I wore it a couple times. It's in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did that day and having that game meant the world to Corey Dillon.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, it just shows all about him. Yeah, well, that day it was all about him.
Right.
It was pretty amazing. It was one of the greatest performances we've seen by running back. I would listen to Corey's case, the greatest performance by running back when you consider everything else that was happening around him.
Right. Yeah, I think and then I thought him adding the context of what it meant, to break Walter Payton's record, around that time. You know what I mean? I think to hear, clearly it added, there's some added specialness to, whose record it was and what Walter Payton meant to him as – a young football player, he knew that his quarterback did not reach double digits in passing yards.
He said, "What, 6 yards?
Right.
What, six?
Nine. Yeah. I mean, that's
I mean, it's the most when you throw that factor in,
right?
And that people also forget that Denver had one of the best defenses in football,
right?
People just forget that fact. You throw that factor in, and 2 for 14 for 9 yards from the quarterback position, and the dude goes 22, 12.6 per rush.
And you also had Brandon Bennett came in and took a bunch of carries from him. Peter Warwick ran for 90 yards that day. I mean, you for
the 22 carries is probably the more, you know, it's like 276. Like, oh, yeah, I could get with that. And then, yeah, like you said, you don't even get 12.6 in a video game.
No. No, but you don't.
Because the smart sim like says, no, that's not
possible. Well, yeah, no one runs in video games. Yeah. No, you
just, I used to.
Did you? You like you, unless it was Tecmo Bowl and you were using Bo.
Why don't you run the ball?
You got to run the ball. Not in video games. No. I drop back. I take a 22-step drop and I launch it. That's how I play Tecmo Bowl.
It was great, though. And honestly, Paul, I mean, I think the first thing that caught my ear was that the Bengals even gave him something for it.
Yeah.
Because usually that's what you hear. That's like the narrative people like to say is like, oh, you know, and Mike even says, we'll ask him again in a few weeks, you know, about this 50-year and honoring people, ring of honor, all this stuff. I mean, hey, he got a nice little play. I'm sure it's understated. I'm sure it's pretty, you know, simple.
Yeah.
You know, but clearly it means the world to Corey Dillon.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of him going every other day to dust it off just to make sure it looks good.
You lick your thumb?
Yeah.
You lick your thumb and just kind of smudge that.
It looks like it might be a smudge there. I see a speck of dust.
Oh, God help that person who, like, somehow is, like, throwing darts and, like, misses the board.
Yeah, don't.
And,
don't do that to Corey.
No.
Don't do that to Corey. So, all right, and let's conclude here with really, I think, the biggest takeaway from this. And it ties into everything that we're talking about here over this whole series and everything the Bengals are doing over at Paul Brown Stadium with bringing players back and finally, even if it is just bringing players back for a game, but doing this top 50 players of all time thing and starting to take steps towards honoring their past, which they just haven't done. And we've been highly critical of them. Former players have been highly critical of their relationships that alumni have. And it's not a ring of honor. It's not a Hall of Fame. It's not all those things that people are clamoring for, but it does mean something to players. And this is where this type of thing is why you have to do it.
Right.
You can't have bad relationships with your former players. You've got to give opportunities to let bygones be bygones.
Right.
And would this have happened? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it would have worked through a channel, a conduit like us.
Right.
If they weren't doing this already, to hear Corey say, I would like to mend fences.
Right.
But this gives an opportunity to take flipping burgers and trade me and all of that stuff and leave it behind and appreciate the good times and what he meant to this organization for everyone to move forward and accept that we've all made mistakes in our lives and appreciate what you guys meant to each other. And Corey Dillon meant a lot to the Bengals. And to hear him say, I want to mend fences and I have a maturity now, I think that's great. It's really good and positive for everybody, perception-wise, for alumni relations-wise. That can really be a huge domino across your whole alumni base.
Yeah, and that's and honestly, Paul, that's been an overriding theme. I mean, Sam Weish in our many talks was the same thing. Sam would really love to get a call to come back for whatever reason.
How has that not happened?
And because I think he said he comes to Cincinnati quite a bit. His kids are still here. His grandkids are still here. He said he did one game for CBS, you know, back in the day. He still considers Mike Brown a friend. Boomer.
Could you imagine the crowd reaction for Sam?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it would be unbelievable.
Yeah. And,
it's never happened.
No. And Boomer, you know, and it was funny because Boomer, you were talking about trade me. I mean, Boomer didn't go, he said he didn't go public with it, but he basically told Mike to trade him, you know, before. And same deal. He's like, look, I didn't leave as a bad guy. I didn't want to come back as a bad guy. Bruce Coslett. I mean, all these. Bob Trumpy, you know, great, you know, former original Bengal who you know, you could argue set, you know, gasoline to the bridges.
Oh, yeah, and down with a microphone in front of his mouth.
Exactly,
yeah.
And yet, you know, here's Bob Trumpy giving a speech at the actual
50th anniversary.
So, I mean, I think that's a big part of this, Paul, I think the way the Brown family handles business, it is business and it ruffles feathers. As Corey said, when you're 22, 23, 26 years old, and then when you get older, as players, which makes sense, as players, you realize, like, I get it.
There were better ways to go about that.
Right. And clearly, you know, this little step the Brown family has taken, it does mean a lot for these guys.
Clearly.
And, you know, I think they'll find, I think they might be surprised, Paul, at you know, how they'll feel about it as well.
It's just such an easy win-win-win for the players, for the team, and for the fans. And it's just to bring that feel-good out about the organization, quite honestly, is something that this team has, this franchise has been missing.
Right.
It needs that feel-good. There's this thing that only we've said it a bunch of times, only a playoff loss can get people over the hump.
Right.
Of if you listen to last week to the podcast, if you stuck around for the part with Jack Brennan where he talked about the far and away the biggest drop off in season ticket sales was from the 10-11 season after that awful in the Carson off season, and they've never really recovered the goodwill from that despite all the good teams that they've had, because this playoff thing has sort of kept held on to the negativity. It's that albatross that's out there. The feel-good feeling is what fans want to do, to be proud to be a Bengals fan.
Right.
For it to feel good and cool and like a great thing. And things like, here's Corey Dillon, here's Sam Wyche, this great history.
Yeah.
This is it is cool to be a Bengals fan. There's lots of great guys, and there's been lots of great moments, and this is something that needs to be refreshed in people's minds.
Right.
Chad Johnson, another perfect person who's made a brief arrival last year, but you know what I mean? I think that's a thing that this organization, it's the one thing that they're really missing is that feel good.
Yeah. And honestly, Paul, I think, honestly, there's only one guy in the talking to all these guys. I mean, Dave Shula, I think, is really, you know, unfortunately for him, I think the only one who, I mean, there's no reason to bring him back. But, like, even Coslett or LeBeau, the other coaches in that run, like, Coslett played for Paul Brown.
Mm-hmm.
He helped invent the no huddle, coached on two Super Bowl teams. LeBeau invented the zone blitz.
Yeah.
Coached on two Super Bowl teams. Like I think when you, if you were to like roll that out the right way, it's like, here's these, you know, here are these guys. You know, it's, you're right. It's something I think, I mean, we we've talked about it many, many times, but I think it's, you're hearing it from these players. Corey, I think, honestly, I could say this speaks for a lot of the players and coaches we've talked to the last 3 weeks and going into the next couple weeks.
Absolutely does. And I just, of all people, I just feel like it's such a huge domino.
Right.
Where it's like, you got to say, if you're anybody from Bengals, well, shoot, if Corey can let it go, I think we all can let it go, because nobody had more open just beef than Corey did.
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, he became the voice of frustrated Bengals players, of a generation of frustrated Bengals players, really.
Just don't blow up his phone and meet him at a golf course, because that'll tick him
off. TMZ just wouldn't leave me alone. TMZ just wouldn't leave me alone. He just showed up at the golf course.
I don't
know
how they got my number.
Yeah.
that's the best part.
Dude, that's how TMZ rolls. You want a little background?
Oh, my God.
TMZ just got a number and just relentlessly bugged him until they showed up in like golf cart number 42 at his country club. With a phone, and he got him to say something about Marvin Lewis, which he didn't take back.
No.
He was like, I'll stand by that one. All right, so that wraps this up. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Just another one last huge thanks to Corey Dillon for agreeing to talk and being completely open and honest and just really a pleasure to talk to about really everything. So, thanks to Corey. Of course, we keep rolling on next week. More of a defensive slant on things.
Yeah,
you spoiler alerted Ken Riley a little bit, but there's other
ones. You know, another fantastic Mike Nyerges production next week, and then the BBP, which actually, you know, you've been reading all these players. We keep talking about all these people, and I think you'll hear. Well, we're going to kind of do a best of compilation.
Yeah, of a lot of the stuff that was sort of editing room floor,
right?
But it doesn't belong on the editing room floor. It belongs in your ear, because
it does. And I trust me, guys, like, it is one of those. I mean, just some gold from some of the best storytellers, as we've said, you know, over the last 50 years of Bengals football.
So we'll have all that stuff coming up next week on the BBP as we roll on and getting closer to football time.
Yeah,
it's almost actually time for football, so we're excited for that. Anyway, we're going to get on out of here, and we'll come back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks again to Corey Dillon, and we'll talk to you later. Do you remember when we fell in love?
young again in a sleeping. Do you remember how it all began? It just seemed like giving, so I did it. Do you remember back in the fall? Remember again? The